Welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. I'm Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA, and today we're continuing our series on the story of our loop, and this is where we bring in some of our gold loopers who have finished the loop, and they just tell you about their story and how they accomplished the loop and what it means to them. So today we're going to be talking with Craig and Nikki Kozak, and they will fill us all in. But first, as always, I do want to take a moment to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage our listeners and viewers to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And so now officially, I would love to welcome Nikki and Craig Kozak to Great Loop Radio. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to see you both. And I know that you've continued to enjoy life post-loop. But let's kind of start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and what is it that attracted you to the Great Loop and ultimately made you decide to get out there and do it?
Well, my parents had cruised the canals of southern France back in 1986 and had a book about the Great Loop, Honey, Let's Get a Boat by Rob and Eva Staub. Mm-hmm. And they had had it for decades. And Craig started talking about buying a boat. And they said, well, here, check this out. And he read it and he is not a reader.
I don't read anything, so for me to read it.
He read the book like 3, 4, 5 times, yes. And it kept, Nikki, you need to read this book. Nikki, you need to read this book.
Yeah.
And so that just sparked a dream in him. And, you know, he started looking for a loop boat after he read that book.
Well, and that book, of course, was written by the founders of AGLCA. And it's interesting. They did the loop. You know, it's over 25 years ago. The book was written about 25 years ago.
Wow.
It's still in print and available on the greatloop.org website. But just a funny little anecdote that actually just happened today. We're trying to work with that to turn it into a Kindle version or a e-reader version. And one of our looper families that has a 15-year-old daughter that's docked right next to us, she has been wanting to do some work as an intern. So, as you might imagine, taking something that's a little bit older and trying to convert it to a Kindle version requires the technology skills of a 15-year-old instead of me.
Right, right.
So I said,
right.
Here you go. And I checked in with her today and she said, this is such a great book. And she was like, I just got so enthralled in reading the story that I forgot that I was supposed to be like checking for italics and things like that. And I just had to laugh because, you know, for somebody our age to enjoy the book,
right,
and somebody who's 15 to enjoy the book is really, you know, kind of speaks volumes to the skills of Ron and Eva Staub when they wrote that. But it still is kind of the thing that really inspires a lot. So it's interesting with my experience today to hear that, you know, that's kind of what inspired the two of you. But Craig, I know you had been a boater prior to that. Nikki, I think maybe you had said not quite as much. So what was your boating background before getting this book and decided this is what you wanted to do?
I grew up on a small, well, a decent sized lake in Wisconsin, Green Lake, Wisconsin, and had been racing and sailing since I was 7 years old and was not a power boater at all. The biggest power boat I'd ever driven was an 18-foot ski boat. But as we read the book, we realized that obviously sailboats were not the right way to go. And as a test, as we got closer after I read the book multiple times, we actually went to the Northwest and chartered a trawler to see if Craig liked power boats and to see if Nikki wouldn't turn greener than a Packers jersey. And we got positive answers to both of those results. And about 2 months later, we bought Joy Girl.
And tell us about Joy Girl. What kind of a boat is it that you did the loop on?
She's a 42-foot Nordic tug. There's not a boat out there that I would trade for. I absolutely love that boat. And, you know, rock solid boat built in America, big tugboat, slow, great fuel efficiency. A good looking boat. We're biased about that, but we love the rich
house.
Yeah, I wanted a pilot house. I know a lot of people are flybridge people. I loved my pilot house. And so did my cat, who spent about 90% of the trip sitting on my lap.
So give us, you know, a little bit of the specs, if you will, of the boat. You know, talk about how many berths did it have? How many, what were the, you know, single engine, two engines, what were the engines horsepower? Those kinds of things that people who are searching for their Great Loop boat may have a list of some of those parameters that they're looking for and might go, I wonder, you know, that pilot house sounds great. I wonder if that fits in with the rest of my desires.
I'll do the external and I'll let Mickey do the internal.
Okay.
She's a 42 foot trawler. She's a single screw, a nine liter Cummins diesel, fully protected prop, up behind the keel, the rudder totally protected from below. So fish nets, fish lines,
crab pots,
occasional bumping of the ground. Yes, we've done that. Come on guys. You all have to.
Oh yeah, we have. And,
yeah, we've all grounded briefly. The boat was, you know, rock solid. Although it was a slow boat, it's marketed as a semi-displacement trawler. Realistically, it's a trawler and it's going to go be the most efficient at trawler speeds. One of the prides of that, we were getting good enough mileage that we were able to fuel in Port Washington, Wisconsin, north of Milwaukee, and not have to take fuel again until the Gulf of Mexico.
Wow.
So we had a 1,500 mile range carrying 600 gallons of fuel. And there's the tale of
there's the Supreme Commander who did the loop.
There we go.
Golly.
So a 1,500 mile range is pretty substantial. Kind of, you know, how many miles per gallon did you tend to get?
We'd say about 3 miles per gallon. And we weren't saying gallons per mile. We're saying miles per gallon. So we were, as an old sailor, I'm used to going 5-6 knots. That's not a problem. We can sail straight upwind in a trawler. So I was not a speed guy. I'm still not a speed guy. I'm still a trawler guy. But
there's so many places on the loop where you can't go fast anyway.
Absolutely.
You know, you're going through locks, you're going through rivers. And so this you're spending a lot of gasoline money, you know, for something that you really can't use it all that often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but, and she had two staterooms. We thought that we really needed two staterooms because we're going to have all these people on the boat, which we did have a lot of people on the boat, but not enough to maybe justify needing a stateroom. We could have, you know, slept on the couch, you know, or something when they came. And we also had two heads, two full galley, very nice salon area and a back cockpit. I love being in the flybridge. Craig didn't like to drive from the flybridge, but I loved to be up there and just watch the scenery go by. It was fantastic. And we loved having cocktails up there, you know. And we were like the tallest boat in most marinas.
Mm-hmm.
We could see out over everything. So I just loved being up there. She is a wonderful boat.
Yeah.
I would add one other thing, Kim, to the joys of that boat. She's a full walk around deck boat. And when you're going through locks or when you're working slips in a marina, the ability to walk anywhere on the boat easily without running through the cabin, the pilot house, of course, open to both side decks, that ability to work the decks as a working boat is extremely useful. And still, having headsets are the greatest fiberglass you're ever going to have on a two-person boat in a lock or a marina.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up about the full walk around, because it is really so important for the loop. And so many loop boats do have those. You know, some boats that don't probably have been ruled out by owners who knew that they really wanted that. But I feel like that's one of the features we actually don't talk about a lot. And it may be because for those who have some experience, it's kind of a gimme. They know they want that. But we have lots of listeners who are really just kind of starting out and may not recognize the importance or how much easier they will make their lives going through locks if they have that ability to get around all of the decks. Ours, we can get there, but we've got some steps. So it's accessible, but it's a little bit more of a challenge. And, you know, if I were 10 or 15 or 20 years older, like some of our members are, I don't know how feasible that would be. So definitely, you know, it's something to consider as people are looking for boats. How easy is it to move around the boat in locks? Because you could think that you're going in port side and at the last second that could change to starboard, and I can't, you know, I've lost count of how many times that has happened. So great point.
We were in 96 locks over the course of the trip. So we,
yeah.
as everybody was mostly, you know, yeah, there's, you, it's not once or twice.
Right. No, exactly. You need to be ready for that.
Yeah.
So tell us, when did you loop? I don't think I've asked that yet.
We started in 2018. Mm-hmm. We moved on the boat in January of 2018. It was in Hilton Head. And we just did all the fixes that we needed to do and practiced, you know, mm-hmm. going out and coming in, learning how to dock it and stuff for a couple months. And then we actually started, I think,
very late April
mm-hmm. of 2019, you said, correct? Or
2018. 2018.
Okay.
2018,
not 19.
Yeah. Not that old.
And we went up to the Great Lakes. So we went from probably April to October, and then we left the boat in Grand Haven mm-hmm. and came home to Colorado for the winter because my mom needed a hip replacement and my dad had dementia. And then we went back the next May of 19 and did the Great Lakes again, and then went down the rivers that fall. And we finished up in March of 2020. We pulled into Hilton Head and people were talking about this thing, this COVID thing. And, you know, they're worried about the island because they weren't going to be prepared. And we're like, COVID? We hadn't heard anything about it.
Right. And that was the time, you know, and thinking back 3 years, it was really a pretty scary time. I was just talking to somebody the other day from the Keys who's home ported in the Keys. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how the Keys really just, you know, they shut down, I guess it's US-1, the one road that runs to the Keys, and boaters were being turned away. So, I've heard that before. And lucky on your timing that you were finishing as that was all happened rather than just kind of starting out.
We felt very fortunate.
We felt very blessed. Yes,
absolutely. So tell us a little bit, you know, a lot of people's, the length of time it takes them to do the loop, their cost, a lot of that depends on their cruising preferences. And by cruising preferences, I mean things like anchorage versus marinas, how far you tend to travel each day, how many days a week you like to travel versus staying put to do some exploring shoreside. So tell us a little bit about your style, your preferences while you were out there on the loop.
I think basically we stayed, you know, I would go through the navigational waterway guide and find out, okay, where do I want to go next? You know, mm-hmm. For me, it was all about the travel. For Craig, it was all just about being on a boat. He didn't really care where we were. So generally speaking, I think we stayed places about 2-3 days. Long enough to see everything that I wanted to see. We thought with Craig's sailing background that we would be in anchorages a lot. But that didn't really turn out to be what we ended up doing because we wanted to meet other loopers. And it was so much easier to get to shore when you're in a marina instead of in an anchorage. We had fold-up bikes, you know, that we could slip down in the Lazarette. And so we'd pull in, get our bikes out and go to the grocery store or see the sights on our bikes. We lived on those bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just so much easier just to stay in marinas and having docktails with people and stuff. So yeah, it was every few days we'd go find someplace new and move on, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's accurate. I'd say we were in marinas 80% of the time, maybe
85%. Mm-hmm.
Nikki did all of the smart work of finding the places. She mentioned the waterway guide, Skipper Bob's. I know they're a sponsor. I'm not mm-hmm. just saying this. Those books are super useful.
Captain John, too.
John's book of how far to travel in a day was very useful because mm-hmm. he does it in, you know, sailboats. We're doing it in trawler basic. Right. Skipper Bob's is especially useful for the locks. The information mm-hmm. as to where you're typically going to tie port or starboard to. Those things were all very useful. And it was an ongoing process to find places, but we did it every night. Nikki did a great job of that.
And I didn't find out until the last half of our loop that on your website, you have a basic itinerary for each part of the loop too, which I didn't know about until later. I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, and you know what that is there? It's still there. It's actually been enhanced somewhat.
Okay, good.
The only thing that always worries me about that itinerary is it is just one example of a possible itinerary of probably an infinite number of combinations of places to stop that you could come up for your loop. So we don't want to give anybody the impression that like it's a suggested itinerary.
Right.
Because everybody's got their own things they really want to see. But we repeatedly get asked for like, well, we just want an idea of where we might go or how many miles things are.
Exactly.
But since then, and since I've been out here on the loop, those individual legs each have a flyover video of Google Earth of the boat after we have finished. So you can kind of get an idea of what the track looks like.
Okay.
And there's actually a GPX file now for each leg that you can download and import into Aquamaps or Navionics to kind of, again, as a planning tool to kind of see what the route looks like. There's a gap, though, I should mention, because I started from Fort Myers and I'm sitting here in Panama City Beach for some time this winter. So that little space between Panama City Beach and Fort Myers is missing in those flyovers. Okay. So as soon as we get the boat back to Fort Myers, I'll fill in the rest. But yeah, it's a great resource for planning. And, you know, for those of us who are more visual, for kind of really visualizing what the route is and what it looks like. So I'm glad you stumbled across that. But part of me is glad you found it late on, because I don't necessarily want to influence people's decisions on where they stop, because there's so much to see and there's so many stops I wish we could have made that we didn't make. So kind of a double-edged sword there. Great.
Yeah.
Point of reference, but really need to make it your own. And kind of with that in mind, like, tell us, how far in advance did you plan where you were going next? Did you kind of have the stops outlined, or did you say, okay, we're leaving tomorrow, where is next? Or did you kind of already know where you wanted to go?
We probably had a couple days, a couple stops, you know, okay, yeah, I know I want to go here, here, and here in the next, say, week.
Right.
And then, yeah, just winging it after that and looking in the waterway guy and saying, okay, what's coming up? And some of it, you know, like I knew that I wanted to see Charleston. I knew I wanted to see
New York City,
New York.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's certain things that you do know, but yeah, as far as you, cause we really couldn't make reservations at marinas and stuff, you know, but a couple days in advance. So, you know, you just, I was constantly looking at that waterway guide to see, okay, what's coming up next.
Yeah, it's a great resource.
And so, I think as all experienced boaters know, or even inexperienced ones should know, you don't have a schedule on a boat.
Right.
You don't want to be out, you know, even in a pretty solid boat like ours, the biggest seas we took were probably 5 footers. If it was more than that, we're not going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't want to be caught. That's exactly why this boat is not moving here until, you know, early February. We had made some plans before we really knew if the Fort Myers event on the 23rd through 25th was going to happen. And Michael's son and his girlfriend are flying in from Cleveland to here. Ended up being able to pull off a Fort Myers event. So we're driving there, because if we waited until they leave, we'd have about a week to get from Panama City to Fort Myers. And that, in theory, is enough time. But we've got a golf crossing in there, and having that much pressure, if we start moving this boat and looking for a good weather window, I just don't want to put that kind of pressure on us. That's where the bad decisions come from. So we'll go to Fort Myers, then we'll come back here and start moving the boat. But Nikki, I think I read in some of our pre-interview questions that you actually get seasick, as do I. So I'm sure you were also looking for a good golf crossing, not just, you know, generally, I think you kind of alluded to this, Craig, that the boats can take more than the people can take. But, you know, the boats are well made. And even people who don't get seasick are probably going to be really uncomfortable long before the boat's having an issue handling the conditions. But so how did you deal with some of that? Because I have not dealt with it successfully yet.
Well, there's a thing called a scopolamine patch that you can get as a prescription. As a matter of fact, the first time I used it was the time that we went out to the San Juan Islands as a test. I was standing on the boat that we were chartering, And I was like, Craig, I need to get off the boat. I'm starting to get sick. And he's like, is the boat moving?
To be clear, this was the pre-charter checkout. We were in a slip in a very well-protected marina in Friday Harbor.
Yeah. So I called my doctor. I was like, I need that scopolamine patch. And they give it to you in hospitals after surgery to stop nausea. So it is a powerful drug. And it's just a little patch behind your ear. And so I stocked up on those. And if I knew we were going to be on Lake Michigan or, you know, the Gulf, I'd stick that on there. It's good for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And the only real side effect I had was it gave me dry mouth. Mm-hmm. But so what? The other thing was meclizine. Meclizine was the next best thing. If I thought, well, it may be a little rough, I would try a meclizine. And I always was in the back of the boat. I realized that, you know, you don't want to be at the front of the boat because that's where all the, you know, you go to the back of the boat and it seems a little bit more steady.
Yeah. So for those who might be in that same situation, and I hear from people who are wondering whether they can really tolerate doing the loop, how many times would you say in total on the loop you needed to use the patch?
I would say two or three,
crossing Lake Michigan from Frankfort to Sturgeon Bay. We did tack back and forth to keep the seas off the beam. You wore one that day. We had to go out because of the draft of our boat. We went offshore around New Jersey, like I think most boats probably do. Mm-hmm. And we had these just rollers coming in, and you did that day. I don't know. Yeah, maybe three or four the whole trip.
You only have to be on the ocean one time. You know, we had a pretty big draft. We had a 5-foot draft, so we couldn't go through the New Jersey ICW. We had to go out. And I don't think I took my patch that day. And we had to go back in and find a spot to harbor because I was just, it was foggy. That was the problem. I couldn't see the horizon. It was foggy. We had these big swells. And so we had to go in. So I only had like really one crisis at one time when we're on the ocean there. Other than that, it's mostly rivers and canals, and there's not a lot of water moving around. So
those are the exact same places I struggled. I pretty quickly learned that what most people considered great conditions on Lake Michigan, I could still considered an awful day. So the only big water crossing we've got left is the Gulf, and I do have a patch. I have not used any yet, but I've been have had one in preparation for that crossing. So
there you go.
And a Gulf crossing, I hope it goes well for you, Kim, because that was one of the highlights of the trip, being a slow boat, being a deep boat. Of course, we did it overnight.
Right.
I stood most of the watches. Nikki stayed up a few, but being out there out of sight of land in the dark with nothing anywhere on the radar was one of the coolest experiences. I love that.
That's what I hear. We are planning a daylight crossing because the boat can do it.
Right.
Partly because I don't know how I will feel and would prefer to plan for a fast, though it's still not fast, but a fast as possible crossing. Michael's crossed the Gulf twice already on this boat, and he's just not into the idea of doing it overnight.
I
agree mostly, but there is a really big part of me, Craig, that hears what you're saying and thinks it would be really magical to be out there in the dark with the stars on a flat, calm seas. Mm-hmm. But I think that's not going to happen this time.
So for somebody who's planning to who is in a boat like ours, we did two quasi overnight runs on the Great Lakes as practice. Mm-hmm. We came up from just north of Portwood, right out of Port Huron, up and around the Thumb in Lake Huron. And then we came out of Sheboygan, Michigan, on the Michigan side, and actually ended all the way up in the Bay of Green Bay 130 miles later at 8 knots. That's a long ways. But we started out in the middle of the night to get some night running experience because I had not done that. I'm a pilot. I can fly in the clouds or in the dark. It doesn't bother me at all. But a boat's a different thing. Going under the Mackinac Bridge at 2 a.m. when everything's lit up is a gorgeous, beautiful sight. Yeah. I even got Nikki up to take pictures. She's a great photographer. See our blog for proof. But I would do a practice run or two in the dark if you've not boated in the night and you're going to be facing a Gulf crossing like we did. It's a magical experience. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, that's like I said, torn. I like the idea of daylight and getting it done quick, but I do see the attraction of that kind of a magical overnight crossing. So
when you're going for your platinum, you can do that.
There we go.
Just put in that I didn't really find it magical or fun.
You were asleep half the time.
Sleep, I don't want to look.
She was in the saloon sleeping with the cats.
Yeah, well, I think I'm probably more like you, Nikki, than Craig, so I'll stick with the daylight.
But, I would.
Yep. Let's take a quick break. I'm going to play a message from one of our sponsors. We've talked a lot about kind of the practical topics, but when we come back, I want to shift, and we're don't have a ton of time left, but I want to shift a little bit to more of, you know, what were the highlights and, you know, what was, what did you gain from doing this trip? So we will be back in just a moment.
Green Turtle Bay Marina and Resort has consistently been voted a must-stop by loopers. It has earned the coveted five-anchor designation from Quimby's Cruising Guide. This full-service marina features over 450 slips. They are located at mile marker 31.5 on the scenic Cumberland River. Green Turtle Bay is a proud commander sponsor of AGLCA, so join them and find your waterway of life.
Welcome back to Great Loop Radio. Today we are continuing our series on the story of our Great Loop. We are talking to Craig and Nikki, and they did the Great Loop aboard their 42-foot Nordic tug, correct? 42?
Mm-hmm.
Great. What other advice do you have for, you know, kind of newbies if they're considering doing the loop and, you know, kind of on the fence? What advice do you have for how you approached it and what you would do next if you were, you know, starting from the beginning and trying to decide whether to go?
Just do it. We, as Nikki mentioned, we spent 3 months aboard the boat. I had sailed anything from sunfish to 42 footers in the Caribbean and the ocean and on the Great Lakes. But a big power boat was completely new to me, and boating in general was new to Nikki. So we moved aboard the boat, as we mentioned, in January, and we spent 3 months going in and out of the slip and taking day trips and learning buoyage and tides. Man, I'm an upper Midwestern kid from the Inland Lake. Tide, that's laundry detergent. But to learn tides and ebb and flow currents, that was all news to us. So we spent 3 months working on that, taking trips down to Savannah and up to Beaufort. Do not miss Beaufort. What a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
But you get that practice. But then realistically, once you go do it, it's easier than it seems. Easier than it would seem. I was terrified even with that 3 months, but we got out there and it was just like we'd done it all along.
Excellent.
Yeah, you'll never have all of the questions answered that you would like to have answered, but they will come as you go along, you know, and all the other loopers were so helpful too. And you guys at the association, I mean, with locks closing and stuff, you guys were so awesome to contact some of the lock masters for us and find out when can the loopers get in. And so keep in contact with the AGLCA. They are an amazing resource. And you guys are so responsive and just so helpful. We really relied on you guys a lot.
Well, we appreciate that. And we are working on the same kind of plan for the 2023 planned closures on the Illinois Waterway that run from June 1st through September 30th is the plan. So it's going to be another repeat of that kind of process. But yeah, in the past, we've been pretty successful at getting loopers through once those locks reopen. So look for more of that this year. And just what did the two of you kind of on a personal level, what did you gain from doing the Great Loop?
Well, we really became a team in our marriage. There were certain roles that he fulfilled, certain roles that I fulfilled, and we had to learn how to trust each other and communicate with each other and appreciate each other's skills. You know, we each brought something different to the adventure and really learned to appreciate each other's skills and resources and just really melded as a team in our marriage, I really feel like.
It was the best relationship building exercise. I mean, you hear these team building exercises and stuff, but living on a boat for a couple of years together with that stated common objective that really, I know people do it solo and I know people do it with families, but as a couple, which I don't know what percentage are couples on the loop, but I'd imagine it's a fair amount.
It's still, even though solo and families are growing in numbers, it's still a really large percentage, real high of couples.
Yeah, it's definitely a team building thing. Our marriage is much stronger than it was. We openly refer to ourselves as Team Joy Girl now, even though the boat is in the past and the platinum hasn't been planned yet, but we still look at Yacht World pretty often. I guess. We ain't started yet.
Well, I know, and, you know, those who finished the loop or have finished the loop can probably relate that, you know, the post-loop blues is kind of a thing if you don't have that next adventure ready to go. I understand that you two have kind of, as you mentioned a moment ago, Joy Girl is in the past for you, and you've switched to RVing, which is a fairly common occurrence for loopers post-loop to go on to some RVing. How was that transition?
Well, it was especially hard for us because we came home and COVID exploded. And so you couldn't you couldn't do anything. And so that was a little difficult for us. We refinished our basement because we needed it. But then we ended up buying an RV. We bought a gas RV first and took a trip and decided that we really liked it. And we kind of, one of the reasons we sold the boats because we had two cats on board and they weren't really, really happy with the experience. And they are much better with the RV. There's less, at least when you stop, you're absolutely stopped. You're not still moving. And then we bought our next RV. Craig, you can tell about that.
Yeah, we moved to a diesel pusher. We don't want to talk too much stuff, but a bigger, more stable unit that we're using about 4 to 5 months a year now. And I mentioned when we spoke early, the five stages of life for boaters. And I'm sure some of you have heard it before, but I was a sailor all my life. So the five stages are sailboat, motorboat, motorhome, nursing home, and funeral home. Praise God, we're only at step three and we'd like to stay there for a while. But we're doing that, but boats are in the future. We still have a family property in Wisconsin on Green Lake where I grew up and have boats there. And a platinum loop is not out of the question. If it wasn't for the rivers and the heat, I'm sure I could get this my executive officer again. She didn't like the rivers too much. I'd do it again in a heartbeat, but really the cats, the one you met, she was fine with it. The other one, Admiral Roswell.
Had a hard time.
Yeah. And well, go ahead, Craig.
To the subjects, because I know that a lot of people do travel with animals. We met cats and dogs on the loop. We ran into a couple of medical issues with our cats. They're both a little bit older. You will find great vets and you will find great people. We ended up in Paris, Tennessee, having our Admiral, our younger cat, get very ill and ended up having to drive him to Nashville in a rental car and spent four nights in an emergency hospital.
Wow.
And then he had to be rechecked down in Mobile. And then the other cat, Scully, that we met earlier, got sick in Florida briefly, and we ended up in a hospital with her. If you're thinking about taking your, at least cats or dogs, we met somebody with a parrot. Really cool
we
parrot.
We have a parrot.
We have a parrot.
But there are a couple of other loopers over time that have had one.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm.
These guys were loopers. But, yeah, you hear this bird talking. But if you think your pet's with you, by all means do. But I would say don't let them on deck underway, especially if they're something the size of the cat. If that goes overboard, it's going to be lights out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So be careful.
Yeah. Well, we will look forward to you going back to stage two, motorboating. And hopefully see you out there on the loop again. But until then, Craig and Nikki, thanks so much for sharing your story. I think you've inspired many today. So we really appreciate your time.
Thank you for all that you personally and all that the organization has done for boating in general and loopers in specific. You guys are the best.
It's absolutely our pleasure. We love what we do. We're working with fabulous people all the time, so makes it real easy for us. But so thank you too again, and thank you to everyone who has watched or listened this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of Great Loop Radio. Until then, safe cruising.